Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in on this Tuesday night to the Rebel Report. My name is Michael Borky. Appreciate you being here, inching ever so closer to football season, and glad that you guys are with me. So Ole Miss comes in at number 21 in the AP poll, and we already did this with the coaches poll, too high, too low, just right. 21 is lower than what I would have them. If I was an AP voter, which is probably for best for everybody if I was not, 21's a little bit lower than I would have them. But honestly, I don't think it's a snub. I had a friend text me say, like, that was disrespectful. Ole Miss doesn't get any respect. You're not going to get me complaining about preseason polls, especially when the team is ranked after losing what they lost a year ago. Not everybody that votes on these polls is as close to the program as you guys are. And when you look at losing four starters on the defensive line, you think, wow, that's a significant loss. We'll have to see if they can overcome that. Most people don't realize how well they've done recruiting on the defensive line, for example. Things like that. Most people look at they lost receivers and don't realize that they're probably better in the wide receiver room. Things like that. That's what you guys know because you watch and pay attention to and cover your team every day. The AP poll voters only can really go off of what they know about all of the teams involved in the voting. And so you're going to get some wait and see votes for Ole Miss. Not only do I think 21 is fine, I think it's still further validation that Ole Miss as a program is viewed differently in a positive way. Four straight years of starting the season ranked, that's the longest streak that Ole Miss has had since they had seven in a row, ending in 1964. I mean, you're talking about uncharted territory. Ole Miss loses a metric ton of production from last year's team that did lose three games, by the way. And here, they're still getting ranked anyway. Personally, I think that's validation and certainly not anything to be too terribly upset over. I think it's a good thing you're starting out ranked after losing all those guys and also three games last year. So that's not what we're here to talk about tonight because I just don't think it's a big deal other than it's a good thing. Lane Kiffin met with the media to talk about the scrimmage that happened over the weekend. We talked about it. How about what Lane Kiffin had to say about it? I've got six audio cuts for you, far less animated this time versus the last time we heard from Lane Kiffin. A lot shorter answers, a little bit I don't want to say like unhappy to be there, but this was more of a vintage press conference, Lane Kiffin, offering very little, but there are still some things to take away. So I will play those six cuts for you, read some of your comments, and we'll get out of here on this Tuesday night. Again, my name is Michael Borky. So glad that you guys are here. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Just search Rebel Report. If you're listening on the website and you haven't subscribed yet, what are you doing? And I know there's some of you that do. So pull out your phone, search Rebel Report in your favorite podcast app. Also right here on YouTube, like, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit that notification bell as well so you know when there's a new video or when we go live. This edition is brought to you in part by Toyota of Brookhaven. Check them out, toyotaofbrookhaven.com. That is the website. And tell them I sent you, by the way, $1,000 off on me. $1,000 off any in-stock new Toyota. If you just tell them that I sent you before anything else, boom, $1,000 taken off the price. If you just tell them that I sent you, they're on exit 40 in Brookhaven, but you can shop with them anywhere. They've got an online inventory their inventory is online at their website, toyotaofbrookhaven.com. So you can shop with people that understand the car buying experience, that will take care of you, that know what it's like to be on your side of this because they deliver. That's what they do at Toyota of Brookhaven. All right, let's start with some audio cuts. First, he was asked about the defensive secondary and how they've looked so far, not only in camp, but after the scrimmage. And here is what he had to say.
Yeah, I think a number of guys hurt early on and missing time back there limited us. Some coming back now. For instance, Dante Core had a really good Saturday and did some good things coming back from an injury. So be good to continue to get people back. We're not all the way back, but lot of moving pieces there and a lot of confidence in our coaches that, you know, like we have in the years before, get them put together in the right spots.
Interesting shout out there. Dante Core, the freshman, the consensus four-star freshman, getting a shout out from his coach there. As he talked about in the spring, it was a big concern. He said mostly just because of injury, but it was a massive concern. They came out of spring practice very worried about what they had on the back end of their defense. Also added later that they're pretty high on just this high school class in general. They think they got a lot of hits, especially guys that can help them in special teams. And he said they're kind of figuring out how many of them can be useful there. But having a good high school class that is prepared to help them, even if it's just in special teams right now, is a very good thing. But I found that interesting, the young player getting a shout out. But still something that I have a question mark next to about this team for sure is the defensive secondary. But it does sound like it's a lot better of a feeling than what you heard and what you heard not only from Kiffin, but just around after spring. They were not very high on the secondary after spring. In fact, they were concerned deeply. Seems like that's gotten better since then. All right, next up, he mentioned in his opening statement that they had some turnovers in the scrimmage. He was asked, you know, is that because defense made plays or offense made mistakes? Here's what he had to say about that.
And whatnot.
Yeah, a combination of that. I thought the defense came out with really good energy, especially after the first drive, and did some really good things and made some really good plays. Good pass rush, created some turnovers, good plays in the secondary. And, you know, quarterbacks, like most scrimmages, you know, some that they wish they could have back and some things to learn from in those.
And in this and throughout, very complimentary of the defense, because how could you not be? They're expecting to be pretty darn good on that side of the ball again. Very little details, like I told you, a bit short-winded in this one, but mentions pass rush, creating havoc, and that is something, forget last year for a second, because they were good at everything except for basically a couple fourth downs last year defensively. 2023, they did not have the same talent level that they did in 24 defensively, but they were still highly productive. They created tackles for loss. They created sacks. They created turnovers. And that is something that I kind of expect out of this defense as well. They don't have, to me, the talent ceiling that last year's defense had. You don't have a Trey Amos in this secondary. That guy doesn't exist in this one. They can still be good there, but they don't have that there. They love what they have on the defensive line, but they may not have a guy as dominant as Walter Nolan, although Xavien Harris continues to get glowing praise about how he looks so far in camp. But still, they may not have those guys. But it feels like the way they talk about this defense, and again, you'll hear more from Kiffin in a second, that this group will be similar to 23 in that it may not have a bunch of like superstar level talented players on it. And it could, it very well could, but if it doesn't, they still expect it to create a lot of havoc. Sacks, that they've got a couple of guys that you think can be high level sack makers, turnovers, creating havoc. That is something that Pete Golding's defenses have been very good at. And I kind of expect, especially after hearing that, more of the same this year. All right, next, he was asked specifically about turnovers involving the quarterback, Austin Simmons. Here's what he had to say about those.
Yeah, made some critical errors and rebounded and played well later on. So that was, I look in the big picture, that's good for it to happen because he really hadn't had many critical errors the entire camp. And so sometimes, you know, it's a lot better to have him in the scrimmage than the game. So it's good to learn from.
If you're looking for a positive spin, first of all, I called them critical errors. Two of them were pick sixes, of course. But this is what we talked about on Sunday. If your young quarterback is turning the football over, that's not reason to panic. This is kind of what training camp is for. You're supposed to this is growing pains, young quarterback, things are going to happen, blah, 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 blah. We talked about all that. Hearing that this was really kind of the first time in camp where he's had turnover issues, of course, is a good thing. If you take the coach at his word, maybe he's not telling the truth. Sometimes coaches don't do that in press conferences. But if he has been better at protecting the football in camp and just had an off day or a few off days strung together, that's fine. It's a teaching moment. It's a learning experience. Get it out of your system now. Much better to happen now than to have a flawless camp and suddenly start turning the football over in week two in Lexington. It's much better to happen now than it would be in week two. So he turned the football over, critical errors, his coach called him. But again, that is it's encouraging to hear that it's not a persistent problem if you take Kiffin at his word anyway. All right. He was asked a good question about who wins scrimmages or in your experience, is the defense always the winner, quote unquote, winner of the first scrimmage? Here is his longest answer of the press conference. Or maybe here's not your longest answer. It's not letting me play videos anymore.
Well, Keywon,
sorry about that. It wouldn't let me play videos. It got stuck. Here's Lane Kiffin live podcasting. Anyway, all right. Here is his answer on the win scrimmage thing.
I think here, lately, the offense has usually been a little bit because defense, I think Pete does a phenomenal job of looking at the big picture, the end result, not trying to win the drill. And that means moving guys in different spots, trying different things. So that we get the best unit out there by the time we get to the opening game. So I think a lot of times over time here it's been the offense. So that was good to see the defense. You know, it'd be great to obviously play defense like we did last year. I think somebody said that's one of the lowest average per carry given up, you know, in the last 5 years in the entire country. So, again, something that was pretty cool to watch, to be able to dominate in games defensively up front the way that we did a year ago, especially coming from where we were just a few years before that, or especially when we got here.
In his process, but now it's your turn. There is something that Ole Miss has not been known for lately is defense, right? They, up until Pete Golding showed up, they've kind of struggled on that side of the ball since Dave Womack left. And your program has turned that side of the ball into something formidable and feared and dangerous. Not only are they performing well in 23, again, their havoc rate was really high. In 24, they were basically dominant throughout. They're recruiting that side of the ball really well and consistently, and their portal hits are really high on that side of the ball and consistent. Ole Miss football has turned into defense first, which is a good thing, right? You cliches, defense wins championships, whatever, but you got to stop people if you want to beat people. Now it's your turn. Now it's your turn for your side of the ball to become reliable and consistent and imposing your will, as you talk about, and dominating games and eliminating the drama and just being consistently good and recruiting better. It's your turn now. Pete Golding has figured out the defense, and he has brought Ole Miss defensively into a place that is really seemingly sustainable and healthy. Now it's time for you to bring the offense to a place like that, consistent, sustainable, and healthy. Because, again, as I tell you guys all the time, the raw numbers make you think that Ole Miss had an elite offense in 2024. But they did not, and you know that they did not because you watched every game, and you know that there were a lot of issues. So now it's your turn. Pete's got it figured out on that side of the ball. You love his process and all of those things. He's brought Ole Miss into a highly consistent and competitive defense. Now it's the offense's turn. If you put those two things together, you've really got something. You're very close already, but time to step up, coach. It's really that simple. All right, he was asked about running backs, and here's what he said.
Well, Keywon, coming in has been electric, done some really good things, you know. And I think it's a very competitive group, a group that can run and catch and pass protect. And Logan Diggs has done a good job. So, and the newcomers filtering in there has made it really competitive and a lot to look at.
Not much to it. I do buy the depth in the running back room, but mentioning Lacy first, again, it's seemingly pretty clear that somebody has taken control of the RB1 slot. Maybe it's all smoke and mirrors, I don't know, but it certainly sounds like that is going to be the primary back this year for Ole Miss, and it's somebody that they really, really liked out of high school. I'm curious about that because he did not play much at Missouri last year, but that was a good Missouri team with a good running back room, and he was a true freshman after all. But him being the first name that got mentioned, of course, is noteworthy. And finally, he was asked about the offensive line and the scrimmage, and here's what he said.
A little bit up and down. You know, we didn't have a starting offensive lineman, and really, by the time it's done, maybe two starting offensive linemen weren't there. So it's always good for other guys to work around and see how they do. But, you know, our first defensive line, you know, is really good. It presents a lot of problems with the scheme that we play. So it's always a test for them.
Praises the defensive line again. And, you know, that's true. They really like their defensive line and the talent they have on it. Talked about a couple of injuries there, which harms them, of course. But that did not strike me as a particularly confident coach. And maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm reading too much into it for confirmation bias about my thoughts on what they have at the offensive line at the moment. But there's not a whole lot of confidence, in my opinion, in those answers, even though he did give credit to that defensive line. We'll get to your comments after I tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Advantage Business Systems. Check them out online at absms.com. Advantage Business Systems for all of your Mississippi office technology needs. Tell them that I sent you. Get a complimentary office technology assessment. So you tell them what you need and what your budget is, and they will find a solution for you on me, absms.com. Also, Priority One Bank. They got 16 locations here, so there's very likely to be one near you. There's one in my backyard, and that's where I go all the time. My Priority One Bank location treats me like a priority. It's in the name, and they will do the same for you. Bank with me at Priority One Bank. All right. First comment, Ole Miss is a little underrated in the AP poll at 21, probably should be 18 or 19. Yeah, I would have voted them higher myself. I think Ole Miss won 9 to 10 games this season. If they hit the over on 8.5, it's a successful season, in my opinion, even if they don't make the playoff, considering what all they're replacing. I just don't think right now you can talk playoff realistically at the moment. I think that is a possibility that they certainly can, that they have the talent, all that stuff. But to talk, this is a playoff team. There's too many questions, and they haven't been afforded the opportunity to answer them yet. So if you're being a realist, that's not quite where I think that you should be right now. Doesn't mean they can't do it, but how much money do you think John Mateer had on Oklahoma being ranked? Okay, I guess I'm the only person that believes him. I know that's crazy, but I believe that it wasn't like some crazy thing like a scandal, right? If he did in fact bet on that game that he listed in his Venmo description line, it was probably a very inexpensive bet between two friends. Like, this isn't game fixing and there's some kind of bookie involved and a sports book. No, it's not that. It's Venmo. And all of his other captions tell me that his defense of "we have inside jokes" is true. And anybody that is scanning the Venmo transaction history dating back 3 years of a college quarterback is a complete loser. And just on that principle alone, I want nothing to happen to John Mateer, because I doubt that it's anything significant or noteworthy in any way, shape, or form. And how it got discovered should be like grounds for dismissal in court. I mean, give me a break. What were you doing? Why on earth did any human being spend their time digging through the Venmo transaction history of John Mateer? All Miss has to do is take care of business and start 4-0, and that 21 will rise closer to the top 10. Yeah, I mean, I don't know everybody's schedule by heart, but looking at some of the teams in front of Ole Miss, let's see. So Oklahoma and Michigan play each other. So one of those two will lose ahead of Ole Miss. A&M's got Notre Dame early, I believe. What, Florida has Miami, is that in the first 4 weeks? LSU and Clemson obviously play each other. Alabama does play Florida State, although I'm not totally convinced that that game's going to be close. But still, there's a lot of opportunities for teams in front of them to lose. So, buy or sell, Ole Miss Athletics as a whole has an even better year this year than last year. Ooh. Sell. Sell. Now, I don't like that, but winning 10 football games, going to the Sweet 16, and hosting a regional, improving on that, what would be what? Baseball would have to make a super. Basketball getting past the Sweet 16. I mean, I have faith in Chris Beard. I think this team has a chance to be quite good. Again, I think they're a lot more talented and physical anyway. Their raw athletic ability and size is much greater than the team they had last year. But do they have somebody like a Padula that can, you know, put the team on his back when it matters most, like he did in March? We'll see. I will sell because those are pretty high benchmarks. Do I think Ole Miss basketball start ranked? I don't think that they will, and they probably should. Might be a product of the opponents on the early schedule, but I'm much concerned about the offensive line than I am. Much more concerned about the offensive line than you are the secondary. I am as well. Because like I said before on Sunday, Pete Golding's earned the benefit of the doubt. He's earned your comfort until proven otherwise. The 23 defense won them games against Tulane, Auburn, Mississippi State, and was pretty good against Penn State. They just got out-talented that year twice by elite offenses. Absolutely. I was reminded today why you never get on Facebook. Randomly on Facebook today in an interview with Kiffin on Marty and McGee Channel's comment section with someone that said Lane doesn't win. Never read the comments. Ever. Never read the comments. Feels like there's a lack of good offensive linemen in Division I football these days. Any clue why that is compared to past generations? Is that due to not being able to practice as much? I think it goes all the way back to younger people aren't playing the position. There's just not as many people that play it to begin with. And part of it, I wonder also, is portal movement is not allowing offensive linemen to develop. Now, that's the position that also leaves the least, but they still leave at a high clip. And I think guys aren't being developed the way they used to. So it's probably a combination of all of those things. All the glory for the big guys is on the defensive line. All Facebook is AI articles, clickbait, and unnecessary drama. Yeah, it's unbelievable what people fall for. That's what concerns me the most, is not that the AI articles exist on Facebook, is that people believe them. That's the concern. It's a circle of ineptitude from those people. First, that you can't win at Ole Miss. Then it's Kiffin can't win the big one, even though he has. Then it circles around with he can't win with a super team. Yeah, ridiculous. So Ole Miss is both a poverty program and one that can field a super team. It's almost like sports fans on the internet are idiots. Anybody can talk themselves into a pretzel to tell you that your team's not good. It's amazing how it doesn't have to make sense and people can still do that. That was the funniest thing about, I mean, people still do it to this day. It's not just back during the NCAA investigation. It's even now. It's like, okay, Ole Miss is, like you said, a poverty program. No, they're so poor. They can't, I mean, Mississippi's so dumb. Why would anybody ever want to live in Mississippi? And also, they have so much money, they're outbidding everybody for players. It's like, wait, hold on. You just told me that I was dumb and poor. Now you're telling me that I'm rich beyond measure. Which one is it? Those things are mutually exclusive, but anyway. Feels like it's defense first, then offense. It is at Ole Miss right now. Look at a team like Texas. They are suffering on the offensive side. They weren't good last year with an average at best quarterback. Terrible on the O-line. Zero run game. They weren't much different from Ole Miss. They won with an elite defense and a soft schedule. That schedule helped a ton. But Ole Miss lost to Kentucky at home, so. Should be happy. Simmons is making mistakes. You learn from them. For darn sake, I think he's perfect. You're kidding yourself. Let's quit being so panicky and question our coaches. Well, I don't think anybody here is panicking over Simmons, but it's quite literally my job to ask questions and at times question coaches and just kind of talk about it. You know, I'm not some kind of savant or anything, but I think you guys, specifically the radio show, like, you know, the internet space either wants you to be overtly negative or you're successful in the internet space by either being overtly negative and controversial or overtly positive in spinning everything. There's not much room on the internet space for the nuance. And for some reason, ESPN falls for it. Well, let's just get the guy up here that says ridiculous stuff all day. And it's like, oh, yeah, look, everybody's talking about Stephen A. No, they're talking about how dumb this is. People mock ESPN's coverage. And just because they're talking about him, they think that they're doing something right. No. I mean, you have radio shows in markets that think that – I'll give you an example. Somebody that does a radio show in a different market once told me that your goal should be to make your audience mad every day. It's like, what? That you think that is going to build a loyal and dedicated audience that is going to patronize your sponsors, which ultimately is what gets you more money? No, if you're just trying to make them mad every day, they're going to leave at the drop of a hat. They're not going to be loyal to you. They're not going to care about you. The goal in a platform like that is to connect with people. That's why political media is failing so much. Like the mainstream political media, because they're not connecting with people. They're not telling them the truth. They're intentionally trying to fan flames. And that's why you see these anchors and stuff, like these shows are either doing poor rating wise or these anchors don't survive. And then they have no career opportunity outside of the platform that was given to them by their employer. There was no loyalty because they didn't build up any. They didn't connect with people. They just kind of BS'd people. And as a result, they have no post-career life. But you see, I mean, you've seen it right here with the people that cover Ole Miss. Platforms change, jobs change, and yet people still, if they do it right, when they go from one site to another, their people come with them because they have developed a devout and dedicated following based on connecting with them. So that's ultimately what my goal is to try to just be honest with you guys as I see it. I don't think I'm overly controversial. At least I don't think so. But at times, if I don't think that things are going right within your program, if I don't tell you that, and then ultimately those things don't go right, then you're going to be wondering where that came from. Why did that happen? I thought you told me everything was fine. Not everything's fine always. Sometimes it's going to feel like something's not right and they figure it out. Like this offensive line thing. It feels like it's not right. They can figure it out. And that would be great. But I want to be able to point back and say, hey, we should have seen this coming. Nobody bats 1,000. I sure as hell don't get everything right. I get stuff wrong every day. But my goal is to try to, you know, be honest with you And honestly, I'm concerned about the offensive line. So I don't want you guys to look up in the middle of October and think, man, they're not good up front. Why did nobody tell me that this was possible? That was a very long response to that. But essentially, Larry, I think if you're not questioning the coaches, you're doing something wrong. Just like if you're not questioning your politicians, even the ones that you agree with, you're doing something wrong. You should always support institution first. Always. Don't fall in love with coaches. Fall in love with institution. Don't fall in love with players. Fall in love with institution. And you can end up loving a player or a coach after. And that would be great. But they come second, or at least they should. Because the institution's always going to be there. Coaches and players are going to cycle in and out all the time. They have better gone back to the drawing board for this season on how to scheme better. We should keep track again of when they cross 30 points in an SEC game, only once since 2023 A&M. Wow. Feel like if all is well after week three, Simmons makes a huge stride. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, I think, to tell you the truth, if you want my honest prediction, because we'll do that here in a couple weeks. Hold on. Sorry. Thought I heard something. I think his first real adversity is going to come in Baton Rouge. I think that's when it's really going to hit him and this team. Like real adversity, not throws one interception, but I mean like makes a mistake, offense struggles out of the gate, they get down a couple of scores. How do they respond? I don't think that the first four teams that they're going to play will present that kind of challenge in the same way that LSU will to me. Austin with the super chat. Thank you, man. Really appreciate you. You say much love. Much love to you, my friend. Thanks. Thanks for your support. Say, silly question, but I'd like your opinion on the matter. A lot of West Virginia fans and media have been screaming about joining the SEC. What would West Virginia bring to the league? You want my honest answer? Nothing. West Virginia would add no value at all to the SEC. I think it would be kind of fun to have them. It's a very passionate fan base. I don't know if you've heard stories about what goes on game day at Morgantown, but it would be something. It would be really something. But in terms of true value adding to the league, nothing. They wouldn't add anything. What will be the sold-out football game at the Vault this season? Every SEC game. I mean, hell, the Citadel won't be. Georgia State may not have a butt in every single seat, but I mean, you have eight home games. I mean, I'd guess six of them are basically completely full. And I mean, all eight of them are going to be sold out. They already are. So Fulmer starts 4-0 on the edge of playoff talk because of LSU. They win that, and we're actively talking about it because they're 6-0 going to Athens. Absolutely. Don't think the SEC takes a Big 12 team. I don't think so either. I don't think so either. Mostly a lot of schools are counting on a new starting quarterback this year. So, I mean, think about it. Ohio State, Texas. That's a little different, but still. Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, Notre Dame, Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, Tennessee was a playoff team last year. Yeah, there's a metric ton of them. Pat, I did not promise you a guest spot for our Hattiesburg show next week. Notre Dame going to lose to Miami? I don't think so. I don't think so. Do I think the real tree game is South Carolina? Florida's too late in the season, so South Carolina does make sense. And yeah, senior day. Three of Notre Dame's first five games are Miami, Texas A&M, and Arkansas. They also play Boise State. Tough schedule for the ACC. No kidding. Georgia Tech all over week zero. Are they playing week zero? I know Georgia Tech plays Colorado early. I know that. I did not know that Georgia Tech was playing week zero, though. Let's see. They are not. Georgia Tech is, let's see, I got to find it. They're playing on Friday night, the first Friday night against Colorado. So that's Auburn-Baylor night is when Georgia Tech is playing. So you had to guess what's the magic number of points this offense needs to average this year to win. I think the number is 26. Yeah, I would say 28. If they score 28 points per game, I don't know. That's still, I don't know if the defense is going to be that good this year. It'll be good, but will it be that good? We'll go with that. 28 points per game in conference play. Gets them a playoff spot. Corey with the good old-fashioned 11-1. Offense averaged 23 points per game last year in conference play, taking out Arkansas. And all three of their losses were still – I mean, if that 23 becomes 28, they're a playoff team. It's 28.5 with Arkansas factored in. Yeah. Most of college football mainstream media coverage is still covering the sport like it's 98. A lot of people stuck in the past. A lot of people stuck in the past. Feels like 26 or 29 points gets them in good shape. Yeah, I mean, hell, if you go up to, if they get 30 points per game in conference, they're a playoff team, I think. I think defensively they'll be good enough for that. Is Kentucky the most likely early loss if the offense is sputtering and making mistakes? Tulane's an interesting spot. Arkansas, I think, is the most likely early loss. I think it would, I think Talon Green can present more problems than Kentucky can. Think Ole Miss people will take 7-5 this year if it guaranteed 10-2 next year? Oh, 100%. But, you know, Kiffin's going to go for 100 at Kentucky. James says, I hope so. Yeah, that, I think Ole Miss might be the most prepared for Kentucky than any game this season. You know, the perpetually online Lane Kiffin has heard and felt the constant reminders about Kentucky. 7-3 would be a problem this year. Probably meant you lost every key game, then an absolute stinker. Absolutely. Yeah, that would be a disappointment. They're at the point as a program now where they have too much talent to fall back that badly, barring catastrophic injuries. I want to see more two tight end sets. I would love to see more two tight end sets. Absolutely would. How about the rumor that Daquan Wright is lining up like Pegues in short yardage? Kill me now. Like to see more short passes as well. Certainly can help a young quarterback. Lost that on that defensive end to Kentucky. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. Think if the SEC got its pick of four schools, not the Big Ten, Notre Dame, North Carolina, Clemson, and who else? Not Florida State. Definitely not Florida State. Virginia. I've heard talk about Trinidad having packages, but based on the way Kiffin used John Rhys Plumlee sparingly, I don't expect Trinidad to be used a whole lot. I don't either. That's a I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing. He very clearly in the past anyway, you only have precedent to go on. He doesn't like shuffling quarterbacks. Quarterbacks on Ole Miss schedule, Calzada, Green, Tulane, Nussmeier, Stockton, Mateer, Sellers, Lagway, and Chapin. If those last two are healthy, rank them, please. Okay. Nuss, Lagway, Sellers, Green, Mateer. Y'all aren't going to like this. Shapen, if healthy. Stockton, Tulane, Calzada. I know Tulane got better at quarterback. Makes that game interesting, but I don't think that he's going to be such a difference maker to make Tulane much better than we already thought that they were going to be. What do I think about the Mateer hype train with Oklahoma? I'm not buying it yet. He was good in a much worse league and a much worse schedule. I would love to see you do it against SEC defenses first. Since 2015, what is Ole Miss's best win and worst loss in terms of quality and talent of the opponent only, not overall context or implications of the game? Okay. Best win was Georgia since 2015, right? So that takes away the two Alabama wins, unless you're saying including 2015, but we'll take those out. Georgia this past year, best win. Although beating defensively, they were so bad, so it doesn't really count. But beating Jaden Daniels' LSU was a pretty big win, too. Worst loss since 2015. Matt Luke lost to Memphis, didn't he? Or am I totally making that up? Give me just a second. I've got a website that can help me get through that. Jog my memory a little bit. Okay. Certainly could be Kentucky. In 2023, they lost to Alabama and Georgia. Neither one of those. 22 lost at Arkansas. No, not as bad as Kentucky. 21, just two losses, Alabama and Auburn. Should not have lost that Auburn game. Matt Corral got hurt. 2020, COVID year, none of those losses were bad. 2019, I mean, they lost to a 6-6 Missouri team, not as bad as Kentucky. Lost to not a particularly great Mississippi State team, but not as bad as Kentucky. They did lose to Memphis. Matt Luke lost to Memphis, but that was a good Memphis team in 2019. So, no, not worse than Kentucky. 2018 ended the season with five consecutive losses. One of them was to a Vanderbilt team, but it was a bowl team. Not as bad as Kentucky. 2017, lost to a Cal team that didn't make a bowl. That could be worse than Kentucky. Lost to 4-8 Arkansas. I don't even remember that game. What happened in 2017? I don't remember that game at all. They were up by 24. Gosh, that was a Chad Kelly game. No, I'm an idiot. That was a Jordan Ta'amu game. He was good that day, too. Let's see. 20 of 30 for 368. No touchdowns, though. Threw an interception. Cole Kelly was the quarterback for Arkansas, but they ran for 260. How the hell did they lose this game? Ole Miss ran for 200, threw for 370, and lost at home. I don't remember this game at all. Had to have been turnovers, right? They lost two fumbles and had an interception. Maybe that's it. Gosh, I don't remember this football game at all. Do you guys? Hopefully they never run that trick play with the kicker they did in the Gator Bowl. That was horrendous. Horrendous. Could I see the SEC playing a Thursday or Friday night game? Not right now. Not right now. They don't think they need to, frankly. They just don't think they need to. Let other conferences sacrifice for Friday. The Thursday and Friday college football games don't rate that well, to be honest with you. They really don't rate that well. So it's not worth the SEC sacrificing a weekend game that does rate well for that. And also, they do value, I mean, maybe it's just lip service, but they do value allowing Friday nights to be for high school football. That does matter to at least some people that work at the league office. That does matter to them. Morris Lawson's 15 might be the 2016 Egg Bowl. Could be that. They lost 66-3 and 62-7 to Bama in back-to-back years. Still not worse than losing to Kentucky last year. I think it's 2016 State, awful 4-7 team. You lost you by 5 touchdowns at home and quit. They really did quit that day. People who don't need to realize how much Freeze had it crash and burn in 2016. Imagine if he had to coach the 2017 team. That I keep going back to that. If people got to witness that. Levy loses to Southern Miss, it could go very similarly to when Matt Luke lost to Memphis. If Jeff Levy loses to Southern Miss, he will not be keeping his job. They won't fire him immediately after the game, but he will not make it. And that will be when you know. They were up 31-7. Matt Luke burned all 3 timeouts in the final kick. Arkansas won on. Wow. Well, hold on. Arkansas kicked that field goal. I mean, I don't know why we're going down this road today. With 4 seconds left. That's why. Arkansas had a 12-play, 62-yard drive down 2. That Ole Miss offense, man. So many empty calories with that offense. So many. But anyway, I got to run. Appreciate you guys being here. I'll see you Thursday night. And y'all have a good one. Thank you for being here. Like the video, all that good stuff. And I'll see you Thursday.
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media Production.